Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
To convince a child to keep walking, try switching roles with them. Let the child play the role of the parent. They'll immediately do what you want them to do.
You are raising in your home people that the Bible is very clear about their status. They need to be converted, not just a conformity of their behavior. They need a transforming encounter with the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the ultimate priority.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Do you ever experience 4 or more of these? This is Wretched Radio. Panic attacks. A lot of people get them. What are they? You must experience 4 or more of these for it to be a panic attack. Pounding heart or rapid heart rate. Sweating. Trembling or shaking. Shortness of breath or a smothering sensation. Chest pains. Feeling dizzy, lightheaded or faint. Feeling of choking, numbness or tingling, chills or hot flashes, nausea, feeling detached, fear of losing control, fear of dying. According to the DSM 5th edition, if you ever experience 4 of those at the same time, congratulations, you're having a panic attack. Now the question is, can the Bible, a 2,000-year-old book that was written, you know, when people were really dumb, you know, just stupid people, they didn't have science and stuff. Does the Bible help us with our panic attacks? Would like to suggest to you, yes, it does. It has much to say. And just like any other form of counseling that never promises it's a get-quick-fix scheme, progressively, God can help you with your panic attacks. And it has worked over and over again for countless people. I hold in my never nicotine-stained fingers a booklet called Help, I Get Panic Attacks. Would encourage you to have these booklets in your church, in your narthex. That would be the lobby. These are booklets. You can get these at Shepherd's Press, shepherdpress.com. And that's Ted Tripp's ministry. It's the Help series, and they've got dozens and dozens of them. Help, I get panic attacks. Help, I have cancer. Help, I just lost a loved one. Help, I have bipolar. Help, and they're great resources to have in your library. Now, they're not a thorough treatment of every single subject, of course, but they get people down the road to demonstrate the Bible can help you with your fill-in-the-blank progressively. This booklet from Lucy Ann Moll, I got to tell you something, it just thrilled my cold conservative heart to read it, because I've got a booklet that will be launched in the fall of 2020 about suicide, depression, anxiety that leads to the taking of life. And so much of what I say in that book aimed at somebody who is suicidal, she's saying to the same person who has panic attacks. Because the Bible's help for you is grounded in the same thing. Do you know what that thing is? Truth. Truth. Why are you having a panic attack? Now, to be clear, if you've ever had a panic attack, you would argue with me that this is not a truth issue. This is just a freak out issue. It's just something happens where my body goes just bonkers. I understand that. I can have that sensation with needles. They kind of make me just a little bit something going into my body. It's not food or it's not oxygen through my nose. I don't like that. And it kind of like makes me a little wiggy. I think it's a vasovagal response where your body just goes, danger, Will Robinson, panic. And you get weird and you can even pass out from that stuff. I haven't done that yet, but I wouldn't be shocked if I did. And you would say, well, that's physiological. And I would say to you, okay, in this instance, let's just say that it is. It still points to what the Bible teaches about the brain, and that is our noggins are kafritz. My thinking is so fallen, broken, and busted, it reacts totally wrong. Even if I'm not processing anything, I'm not thinking it through in any sort of logical fashion. It just happens. And you know this. If you have fear of heights, for instance, it's totally illogical. You're not thinking it through, and all of a sudden you look down and your body just goes bonkers. Same thing can be true with panic attacks. Just overcomes you. You don't even know why. This doesn't mean that we need to take medication for it. It's still a thinking issue. It's still a broken brain problem. It's still a truth issue. My body, even if I am not cognitively processing why I am freaking out here, my body's still doing that. And now I need to straighten out that thinking from its crookedness to align it with reality so that I don't have a panic attack anymore. And that is exactly what Lucianne Moll, M-O-L-L, she writes about in this book that, help, I get panic attacks. She got them. Driving home one day, suddenly being on a freeway, I'm like, pull over, I'm going to kill somebody because I'm going to pass out or I'm going to just be out of control, and so I'm going to get off the road. Now, was there anything rational about it? No. Now, caveat, does that mean that there are no dangers on the freeway? Of course they are. And there are times when our body should respond quite, oh, danger! Somebody's pointing a gun at you. Yeah, I think you can be in a little bit of a panic over that. That's rational. But suddenly, looking down from a high place that is perfectly safe, you are encased with railings that are sound, to freak out or to be afraid to open up the door because out there in the sunlight, I just completely unravel. Agoraphobia or acrophobia. Agoraphobia is outside.
Fear of marketplace.
Fear of the, yeah, that's right. Fear of the marketplace. And then arachnophobia is a fear of spiders. Now, Should you have a fear of spiders? Yeah, well, they can hurt you. Should your body just do a complete freak out and now I never want to leave the house because there could be spiders out there? Well, that's irrational. And so what needs to happen is my thinking needs to be brought into alignment with the truth. Panic attacks often proceed from faulty thinking. And then she gives a word of encouragement. By God's grace, you can change fearful thinking patterns into God-transformed faithful thinking. It's going to require a willingness to trust and obey God and to persevere because it can take some time. Your faulty thinking didn't develop overnight. It's not going to go away overnight. But when you learn to realign your thoughts with God's thoughts, your panic attacks can become a thing of the past. I got to tell you, this just brings me such joy. I've uttered that sentence multiple times, and I've never met Lucianne, and I don't think she's ever met me. So why do we talk the same way? Because this is what the Bible prescribes for us, that our thoughts need to get realigned with God's thoughts. Furthermore, God can use your panic attacks for good. You might someday be able to help others out of this. Your panic attack might reveal something inside of you that reveals a sin area that needs to be fixed. Or your panic attack can cause you to trust God more and more. Now, wouldn't all of those things be positive benefits from your panic attack? Of course they are. There's got to be something good inside of your panic attack. Otherwise, you wouldn't have panic attacks. Why? Because God doesn't do anything but things that are good for his children. My panic attack is good for me? Yes. How can you say such a thing? Because the Bible says that. God works all things for your good. He doesn't work out something that is good for you after it is done. The thing that is being done for you is good. The only question is, what is it? There will be a good. Let's just say for yucks, just fanciful scenario. You've got panic attacks. And in order to get over them, you need to spend making just... Don't look for holes in this scenario. The prescription for you is to spend 3 hours a day in the Bible. That's what's going to fix you. There you go. There's your prescription right there. You telling me that's a bad thing? You telling me that isn't going to help you? You telling me that isn't going to grow you? You telling me that isn't going to make you more and more like Jesus Christ? What would be the fruit of that? All because of your panic attacks. There is something good in it. Now, too often these days, and I'm not saying that it should be taken off the table, but too often these days, what do? We medicate it, we cover it up, and what do? You lose the blessing. If you numb it, If you use alcohol, for instance, and by the way, as an aside, more and more people use an alcohol. Now, here it is right here. Alcohol killing more and more Americans than ever. 72,000 alcohol-related deaths among people over the age of 16 in 2017. So many times they're using it to numb. To the Christian, you should go, no, I'm not going to numb the problem. I'm going to figure out the problem. I'm going to apply God's solution to the problem, and then I'm going to be better on the other end of this problem. Alcohol robs you of that blessing. By the way, the majority of alcohol-related deaths involve men. The climb in deaths over time, however, has been increasing faster for women. You figure that one out, but nevertheless, alcohol and a numbing of your panic attacks will rob you. Medication will rob you of the blessing. I'm not taking medication off the table totally, but don't rob yourself of the blessing of becoming more like Jesus Christ, because God is using the tool of a panic attack. How to get one's thinking in alignment with God's, specifically regarding panic attacks, courtesy of Lucy Ann Moll. Help, I get panic attacks next on Wretched Radio. Let's go to Eastern Europe for yet another great story coming out of the Tomorrow Clubs.
Andrea was left by her mother when she was 3 months old. The Tomorrow Club director decided to pray for this girl, and she repented. She used to be a sad-looking kid. Now, seems like that smile never comes off her face.
So many kids are abandoned by parents who need to go to other countries to make a living. They donate their organs. They leave the kids. They are lost physically and spiritually, and the Tomorrow Clubs finds them. They teach them the gospel. They help them to memorize Bible verses. They even will help them with their family lives. It's a magnificent ministry, story after story coming out of Eastern Europe. $30 a month, 30 disciples. Tomorrow Clubs is the ministry. Would you please consider supporting a club of your own? Tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Does this sound familiar? It's Saturday night, and there you are on your computer, and you decide to watch a video of John MacArthur. And the next thing that you know, you're 3 hours deep in YouTube watching a baby giraffe trying to stand up. Hey, it's happened to all of us. Instead of watching random videos and losing all sense of time, we suggest visiting wretched.org. There are hundreds of hours of biblically based TV and radio, and a library full of hand-picked content specifically for you. Over 2,400 30-minute TV programs with subjects ranging from abortion and apologetics to systematic theology and hermeneutics. Wretched's hour-long radio programs posted every day tackle tough issues that we all face today. That's not all. Every Monday, you can expect to hear Grace to You's Phil Johnson on Too Wretched for Radio with Todd. So the next time you're just wandering the web watching baby giraffe videos, head on over to wretched.org. Wretched.org.
What two pastors go through to bring Bibles to their parishioners in the Philippines.
Two pastors, they had to rise up 3 a.m. and walk for 2 hours. And after that, they have to ride a bangka across the river for an hour and then walk again for 3 hours just to get hold of those precious Bibles. They will return in the same way again to bring those Bibles to people whom they are ministering.
That is what they go through. What must you and I do to bring those Bibles to believers around the globe? Pick up our phones. Call Bible League International. Would you do that right now? $5 per Bible. Could you send 7 per month? Call Bible League International right now, and they will be delivered to the hands of a believer. 1-800-YES-WORD. Just giving you a chance to write that down or to call it. 1-800-YES-WORD to bring Bibles to believers through Bible League International. 1-800-YES-WORD.
Sometimes simple is best. The Mission Ball is simply a soccer ball covered with biblical text, a thorough law and gospel presentation, and an effective tool for drawing a crowd, making a connection with people, inviting curiosity, and ultimately creating opportunities to proclaim Christ. With your support, the Mission Ball can get into the hands of more lost and dying souls. Go to themissionball.org. That's themissionball.org.
Titles of Christ.
In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the propitiation for our sins. Propitiation means a wrath-removing sacrifice. Jesus bore God's wrath on our behalf, and in return, we receive his righteous standing before God the Father.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Who wouldn't like to have their soul delighted? This is Wretched Radio, Psalm 94, 19, Rexella. When my anxious thoughts multiply within me, your consolations delight my soul. Want your soul delighted? Maybe God is causing you to have some sort of anxiety, panic attack, so that you can trust his promises and your soul can be delighted. How poignant is the Bible? How probing? This has got a Southern Baptist sermon written all over it. It's poignant, it's probing, and it's powerful. The Word reads you while you are reading it. God permitting or causing difficult things, maybe even panic attacks, just an utter freaking out of a situation, so that you can increasingly lean on him, read his word, and your soul will be delighted. Let's dive into a book, Help I Get Panic Attacks, Lucy Ann Moll, helping us to understand what panic attacks are and how to get over them. If you recall, it's not just being anxious or upset on occasion. It's more of a, your body's out of control. You feel like you're in a free fall, just absolute terror. Shortness of breath, chest pain, dizzy, nausea, hot flashes, feeling detached, losing control, sweating, pounding heart, trembling or shaking. Wow. This is, this might need to be updated, because that's pretty much how I feel every time I finish at Taco Bell. Nevertheless, let's jump into this booklet to see if we can figure out how we can be helped with our panic attacks. 1 Samuel 17, 8 through 11. Why have you not come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And Goliath the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all of Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. I love the Old Testament. One more reason not to detach it. We can learn something about panic attacks. What's being described here? Dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, it might be not on the scale of the complete type of feeling, but it's getting close. Contrast how they responded, Saul and the other Jewish people in Israel, dismayed and greatly afraid. David's response to Goliath wasn't panicky at all. He was a teenager. He should have had some fits, trying on Saul's armor, getting his stones ready, hearing the taunts of the giant. How's about his brothers ridiculing him? But he reacted totally different. Same section of scripture, 1 Samuel 17. He remembered God had prepared him as a shepherd boy who protected the sheep and struck down bears and lions. And he knew that God then had equipped him, prepared him to deal with this pesky giant. And so what did he have? Not fear and not panic. He actually had confidence. It's as simple as that. David was trusting God. Saul and the Jews weren't. Now, I get it, how that plays out. It's longer, it's harder than that. But that is the historical narrative to show us what is going on when we have panic attacks. We are not believing God. We're not trusting God rightly. Now, this is not to say that you're not saved. It's just that you're not trusting God the way that you should. Some people would say, hey. In fact, I received an email from somebody. What you're describing sounds a lot like prosperity promises. If you have more faith, you'll have more money. It sounds like word of faith. If you have more faith, you'll be healed. Are you saying that if you just have more faith, you won't be anxious? Yes. Yes, I am. Is it the same thing? Yes, it is, but their promise is false. There's no promise that if you have more faith, you are going to be physically healed. There's no promise that if you have more faith, you're going to have money. Is there a promise in the Bible, though, that as you have increasing faith in God, you'll have less anxiety? Absolutely. And so I don't want to say that it's not the same thing that the Word of Faith Prosperity people are doing. I'm saying one promise is biblical and the other promises are not. God does not promise nothing but cash, nothing but perfect health. Look at all the prosperity preachers as they read through their glasses, as they take trips to the hospital. And by the way, it's not uncommon for these prosperity preachers to do that through the back door of a hospital because they know if they are seen going into a hospital to receive help that their theology is outed. There's no promise of that, but yes, God does promise. An increasing trust in Him brings about a peaceable fruit of calm and even joy, and we see that with Saul and David. So don't reject this. Is it? And it's not as simple as, well, just get more faith, and then you won't be all anxious and depressed and stuff. We want to teach how that happens and what God does for us as we struggle. Some examples from the Bible. The Israelite size, armor, bravado, 1 Samuel 17:24. They thought Goliath more powerful than God's promises. So we see an example of David trusting God and being calm in the heat of battle. The reluctant prophet Jonah, who sulked and prayed for death. He asked God to please take my life from me, chapter 4. Jonah's wrong interpretation was that God would serve his desires rather than show compassion for the Ninevites. So what was wrong with Jonah? Why was Jonah wanting to die? Because he didn't think that God's promises were the best, that God's way was the best. Sarah, the wife of Abraham, who laughed cynically. Why? Because she wasn't trusting that God could actually deliver. She was afraid, says Genesis 18:15. God couldn't pull this thing off miraculously. She was beyond childbearing years. In each of those cases, what do we see in these historical narratives? The characters were focusing on what? Their circumstances, rather than God and His power. They were trusting that what was in front of them that they could see was bigger than God. They deemed their circumstances to be dreadful, concerned that they wanted something to happen, victory over the giant, obliteration of an enemy, the birth of an heir, that it might not happen. God had said it's gonna. They said, I don't think so. Or they didn't want it to happen. They focused on the difficulties of the future, temporal matters, and self. And so they're anxious, and you will be too. So some help from Lucy Ann Mole. Help, I get panic attacks. It helps to know the root of our fear. The root of ungodly fear is belief in a lie. It is a wrong faith. It is a small faith, which is why we are troubled. You're not trusting the right thing. And increasingly, you need to trust in God and not in circumstances. From the booklet, you may not hanker for an HGTV home or a Lexus, but you may desire one or more of these things: peace, security, comfort, significance, respect, love, or approval. And when you fear losing what you desire, anxiety grows like a weed. In other words, it's a good desire, but when you're wanting that, needing that, and it's got to happen, otherwise you won't be happy, you're trusting in something that is shifting. Name something you treasure that plays into your panic. What is it? What is something that is going on in your panic that you're wanting? Peace, security, significance, respect, love, approval. Maybe it's as simple as that. If I go outside of the house and I go out into the streets, people are going to see by my clothing that I am not successful, and I crave their approval. I want them to think that I'm successful. They're going to see that I'm not. Therefore, you panic. I don't know. I'm just making one up. But that's what you're invited to do, encouraged to do. Figure out what is the desire, what is the thing that you're needing so much that it's causing you to freak if you don't get that thing. Nothing wrong with wanting peace, security, comfort, respect, love, approval. Who doesn't want those things? The problem is when you want those things more than you want God. When you're putting more stock in them, when those things are your idol and God is not. If your overarching desire is, well done, good and faithful servant, well, then those other things, they get put in place. And you don't panic. Question. If you're having panic attacks, what are you trusting? What are you idolizing? What are you desiring? Identify that. Kick that off of the throne of your life. Increasingly put God there by reading His Word, applying His Word, and trusting His Word. You will grow in faith. And who will fear man when God is in control? The fear of man, it is a snare, but trusting in God will remove that fear. Is it an overnight sort of affair? No, it's not. It is progressive, but it will work. It has worked, and God promises that it will work for you. This is Wretched Radio.
SOS Ministries wants to see a movement take place within God's church in Uganda. They want to see God-fearing, Christ-proclaiming churches rise up across the country and impact the whole of the Ugandan society. To reach out nationwide, they have the Ministry of Church Strengthening and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. But without the consistent support of God's people, none of this is possible. If you can help support SOS Ministries, go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com. This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Verkennis. Organ donation companies in Canada are targeting patients who want to end their lives by physician-assisted suicide or euthanasia. The Ottawa Citizen last week lauded the country's medical aid in dying law as a boon for organ and tissue shortages. The newspaper reported that in the first 11 months of last year, medically assisted deaths in Ontario accounted for 113 organ and tissue donations, up 14% from last year and over 100% jump from 2 years ago. Canada decriminalized doctor-prescribed or administered suicide in 2016. That still just sounds wrong whenever you hear it. Since then, Ontario has contracted with Trillium Gift of Life Network, they're an organ and tissue procurement company, to actively solicit patients approved for assisted suicide. Ontario's waiting list for people who need donated organs hovered at about 1,600 people until this, quote, relatively new source for body parts surfaced, the newspaper said. Ontario is the first jurisdiction in the world that requires hospitals to notify Trillium of known imminent deaths, including by euthanasia. Euthanized patients make up about 5% of all of Ontario's organ and tissue donations last year. Many ill and disabled patients in Canada who are donating their organs are not imminently dying, says Wesley Smith, a senior fellow at Discovery Institute's Center for Human Exceptionalism. He said the clear message being sent to suicidal, ill, and disabled Canadians, with the active support of the organ transplant community, is that their deaths can have greater value to Canada than their lives. Wow. Oh, and some doctors are taking it even further. They're pushing to harvest vital organs while patients are still alive, or death by donation, if you will. What a world. What a world. A newly elected member of the British Parliament from Northern Ireland urged lawmakers to repeal a law that stripped the nation of its long-standing protections for unborn babies. In her first speech to the House of Commons last week, way to go, Carla Lockhart, a member of the Democratic Unionist Party and a new mother, lambasted the measure, which took effect 3 months ago, saying, quote, "It is imperative that I speak to highlight the anger, disappointment and frustration concerning the change in abortion laws that have been foisted upon the people of Northern Ireland. The Parliament of the United Kingdom legalized abortion in the traditionally conservative region by taking advantage of Northern Ireland's politically deadlocked government and imposing a sweeping amendment in October, leaving people a bit shell-shocked and some grieving. Until now, a 158-year-old law rooted in Northern Ireland's Christian heritage had protected babies from abortion, unless the mother's life was at risk. If this new law stands, the nation will begin incorporating abortions into its public health service at the end of March. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Tony Verkennis.
Books of the Bible. Philemon was a Christian and fellow worker with Paul. His slave, named Onesimus, had stolen from him and run away. By God's providence, Onesimus met Paul and became a Christian. Paul sent Onesimus back with this letter, urging Philemon to forgive Onesimus and treat him as a brother in Christ. This letter is a grand example of the gospel in action. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Pixes, I got you Pixes here. This is Wretched Radio. Oh, how fun it is. You're in a conversation, chatting about this, then that. Somebody whips out their cell phone and goes, hey, well, let me show you. And then they get totally distracted. Their thumbs start flailing away. And then what inevitably happens? Well, I can't find it, but here's what it looked like. I'm about to do that to you. This is radio. Can't show you the pictures, but I'm going to describe for you a number of pictures, starting with a book that I saw in a store. I had to take a picture of this. This made me lose my breath. This is a book that is being sold on the cabinet where they've got the best sellers. Here's the important books right now from Reza Aslan, R-E-Z-A. Is that how you say it? A-S-L-A-N. Number one, New York Times best-selling author of Zealot. I believe that he identifies at least as being Muslim. The name of the book caught my attention, of course, as one of the important books that we're supposed to be paying attention to. God, A Human History. So Reza, how do you say that, Joey? Reza
wrong.
Aslan?
I say it wrong. I say Reza. Yes, every time I try.
Option. You're not helping at all.
No, I'm not.
The R-Man is going to give us his understanding of how we went about the business of inventing God. This is at the end of the chapter where he's basically making the case that we just kind of cobbled a bunch of ideas together. And he talks about the myth of Adam and Eve. You get yourself an airplane sickness bag. Do something. You're going to need to not pass out when you hear this. This is the end of the chapter. Make your choice. Just make your choice. Believe in God or not, writes the R-Man. Define God how you will. Thoroughly postmodern. Either way, take a lesson from our mythological ancestors, Adam and Eve, and eat the forbidden fruit. You need not fear God. Quote, you are God. Wow. Wow. Apparently, he didn't read the myth about Adam and Eve correctly. Because that's exactly what the devil told them. Absolutely staggering. And this is the type of glop that lines bookshelves in the important section, the best-selling section at your local bookstore from the R-Man, Aslan. Absolutely staggering. If this isn't Tower of Babel, if this isn't Genesis 3 all over again, I don't know what is. Absolutely shocking. Another picture for your consideration. Joey, your face actually kind of demonstrated a little bit of, what? Even you were surprised at that.
I was doing some breathing exercises.
Seriously? Whether God exists, doesn't, just whatever you want to do, whatever works for you. You are God. Don't believe the lie. Eat the fruit. Woo! Dude, you're Satan is what you are. Walking the streets of Greenville, couldn't help but snap this. Greenville, I'm telling you, what a town, what a town. If you bought real estate in Greenville a few years ago, you're very happy. We love going to that little town and just walking the streets. We like walking by the real estate, their stores that are set up with real estate agents and taking a look at like what's for sale. It ain't cheap to live in Greenville anymore, I'll tell you that much right now. Woo. It has been invaded with a lot of foreigners from up north, too. A lot of New Yorkers making their way down. And a lot of people in the South aren't happy about that. Their way of life is getting altered by the liberals from the great Northeast. By the way, speaking of New York and speaking of the Northeast, there was a list of the worst states to live in during wintertime. And this is according to, I guess, the weather reports, how much snow, the temperatures, and what people say. The number one state that identifies as having the worst winters in the country, not New York, and their winters are lousy, Minnesota. Minnesota wins.
Worst,
worst place to live in the wintertime for weather anyway. Yay. Yay. Endured it for years.
Keeps the riffraff out.
I can,
or keeps
I can
them
understand
here because they can't get their cars out of the snowbank.
This is why people from like Phoenix, you don't ever find people like in their 60s and 70s moving to Minnesota going, couldn't wait to retire so we could get to Minnesota. But you will find people in Minnesota wanting to go to Phoenix or to Florida, and New Yorkers going a lot to the South, changing the voting, changing the demographics, changing a lot of stuff. Greenville is no exception, and it's certainly changing the property value. So we're walking down the street, and there's a storefront for Christian Science. Please note, Christian Science is neither Christian nor is it science. I was struck by their logo. It has a cross with a crown around it. And the slogan in their emblem is, heal the sick, raise the dead, cast out demons, cleanse the lepers. And I thought, hey, what do you know? Another cult that thinks we can be raising the dead. Don't know if you've seen the story lately of the NAR, the New Apostolic Reformation movement, claiming that we've got the authority to raise the dead because Jesus told the disciples that they can raise the dead. Indeed, he did. He told the apostles they can raise the dead. Why? To support their message. They had to go into these towns without a written word, without a textbook that has a history, without a textbook that has a religious system revealed that has been around for centuries. They had to go and preach this Jesus without a New Testament. And they were given the power to do signs and wonders to authenticate the message of the messenger. That's the purpose of signs and wonders. So when Jesus gave that authority to the disciples, he was giving it to the disciples. And you and I do not have the power to raise the dead. Should we ever pray for that? Certainly, you may pray for that. You can certainly pray that God would save somebody's life. Does God ever do those things? I suspect he does. No, I don't think that anybody's ever truly dead because nobody goes to heaven. It is appointed unto man once to die, then judgment. So I don't think that somebody dies, goes to heaven, and then gets yanked back somehow because we prayed God changed his mind. But some, if they appear to be dead and you're praying, oh God, please, 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 and they come back to, quote, life, was God involved in that? Absolutely. Does God heal the sick? All the time, even as he uses medication. I don't think I'm going to be able to get this right, but I just heard somebody use a line. We give medication as for because that's our job, but God's job is even to heal. In the medication can't do the job of God. We do the medication because God has provided that as a blessing, but still God must do the medication has its limitations. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. What's the difference? God. That's the difference. So God is curing and healing all the time. I just don't think that he has authorized people to go about the business of raising from the dead, that they are a dead raiser or that they are a sickness healer. That was given to the disciples. Christian Science has it wrong, and so does the NAR. Another picture that you can't see. It's of Glacier National Park. This was a story from a website that's really not Christian. I think it's kind of the Joey, you looked up this website. This is from alt-market.com. So I'm trusting that this source is correct. But it's also it's not like a Christian source. It's not a climate change site. It's a guy who writes, in St. Mary, Montana, officials at Glacier National Park have begun quietly removing and altering signs and government literature, which told visitors that park glaciers were expected to disappear by either 2020 or 2030. Oops. Teams from Lysander Spooner University visiting the park each September have noted that Glacier National Park's most famous glaciers, such as the Grinnell Glacier and the Jackson Glacier, appear to have been growing, not shrinking, since about 2010. The Jackson Glacier may have grown as much as 25% or more over the past decade. So now, these signs that promised these glaciers will be gone in 2020 or 2030, those signs are gone because they weren't right. They're being replaced with someday. Workers replaced the dioramas, gone by 2020 engraving, with a new sign indicating the glaciers will disappear in future generations. Oops. Another picture that I hold in my hand. Oh, this is a beauty. It's a number of pictures. It's actually a calendar from Tomorrow Clubs. Joey, look at that. You can see this. Look at those kids, those adorable kids. This happens to be in Romania.
Aww.
Tomorrow Clubs, it is cute. These kids, such poor villages, such a spiritually bleak place, get the gospel delivered to them from kids, from people who love them through the Tomorrow Clubs. I wish you could see this calendar. You'd be so encouraged. These little faces. So many of them are so sad because they have so little physically and they don't have the gospel for spiritual health. I don't know if you got your calendar from tomorrow. You did if you're a Tomorrow Club sponsor. If you didn't, boo-hoo, you can become a Tomorrow Club sponsor. Get your own calendar with a picture of these kids who are hearing the gospel through Tomorrow Clubs. They're like little Awana camps, if you will, all throughout Eastern Europe. There's hundreds of them. You can sponsor your own $30, 30 disciples each month. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched. And you can see these pictures, too. This is Wretched Radio.
Thanks for being here today. Glad you would spend part of it listening to Wretched Radio. And thanks for sharing your questions, comments, conundrums, and snarks, and your wretched stories with us. Two easy ways to do that. Idea@wretched.org, the old faithful email, idea@wretched.org, or voicemail us, Beep Talk, 1-877-282-BEEP. Questions, comments, conundrums, snarks, your wretched story, all are welcome. All we ask is on the Beep Talk, you please keep it pithy. And if you would, no swearing, because it really wreaks havoc on Joey's delicate sensibilities. Thank you for that. 1-877-282-BEEP or idea@wretched.org. And if you would like to help make more wretched stories possible, would you become a wretched monthly gospel partner? So if you would, pray on it, please, and get all the details on becoming a gospel partner at wretched.org/donate. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
No doubt, if you've spent even a minute listening to conservative media, you have been whipped into a frenzy. The problems with our society, the collapse of a culture, the statistics, the legislation. We got to do something about this. But then we're never told what to do. I believe the greatest social ill of our time is the war against the unborn. Millions of children being killed in our country during our lifetime. And we can do something about it, and we can practically get engaged in the war for life. Preborn.org/wretched, $28 will provide an ultrasound 80% of the time. It saves the life of a child. Let's not just be righteously indignant. Let us do something to save lives. The women hear the gospel, they receive support, and they choose life. $28 for an ultrasound. Preborn.org/wretched.
Thanks very much to the generosity of our monthly gospel partners. Now, if you watch or listen to Wretched on a regular basis, would you consider becoming a gospel partner? See, our content, what we do, is only available because of the generous support of our gospel partners. Thanks to them, you can find full Wretched radio and TV episodes at the home of all things Wretched, wretched.org, among many other free resources. You see, without our gospel partners, there is no Wretched. So, if you enjoy watching or listening to Wretched and would like to continue to do so, consider please becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner. Visit wretched.org/donate for all the details. And please know that we will be faithful stewards of your money. Right now, 83% of every dollar goes to ministry work. Consider becoming a gospel partner. Go to wretched.org/donate.
Attributes of God. What does God's patience look like?
2 Peter chapter 3 verse 9 says, "The Lord is not slow to fulfill his promise, as some count slowness, but is patient toward you, not wishing that any should perish, but that all should reach repentance. God is not hurried, nor has he forgotten his promises. God will bring about the fulfillment of his eternal plan in due time." This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you bump into Michael Bloomberg, don't worry, you don't need to witness to him. He's earned his way to heaven. Boing, this is Wretched Radio. Shocking. Michael Bloomberg, who's spending some dough. I'm seeing a lot of his commercials talking about issues and then talking about the state of his soul. He was talking about smoking in New York, anti-obesity pushes. You know, he was the fellow who didn't want you to have a soda that was this big, etc. Crackdowns on private gun ownership. To the New York Times, he said, quote, "I'm telling you, if there is a God," there is, sir, "when I get to heaven, I'm not stopping to be interviewed. I'm heading straight in. I've earned my place in heaven. It's not even close." How many people have their theology based on cartoons? How many times have we seen the cartoon where somebody, they get hit with an anvil on the head, their spirit goes up, they're a cat, they're a chicken, they're the fox, whatever, and their spirit goes up. There they have to enter the pearly gates where Peter stands with a clipboard to do an interview why they should be led into heaven based on their works. We are a culture that seems to buy that narrative, and Michael Bloomberg is no exception. He thinks you got to do good to get into heaven, and he certainly has done enough because, well, he's Michael Bloomberg, and he's tried to help people to not drink too many sodas, to not bear firearms, and not to smoke cigarettes. So that's earned his way into heaven. Wow. Oh, man, Scylla. That's just absolutely chutzpah. He's Jewish, so I presume he can have chutzpah because he's Jewish, if I'm not mistaken. In the meantime, the Pope denouncing rigidity, that we shouldn't be witnessing to people. Gulp and double gulp. By the way, saw a, was it on Netflix? I don't know what it was. One of those cable channels. It was called The Two Popes. And I have to tell you something. It was absolutely fascinating to me for a number of reasons. Number one, it appeared to be pretty accurate. Second of all, it was really good acting. It was Anthony Hopkins. Oh, and I can't think of the other fella. He's not as famous, but you've seen him. He's a character actor. It was just two older actors acting a lot. A ton of dialogue, not a lot of movement. There were no explosions. There were no sex scenes. It was just two old actors talking to each other. This was the Pope. What was his name?
Jonathan Pryce.
You know, you've seen him in a million things. So this was the Pope that followed John Paul II, the German Pope. And he was a conservative Pope. Jonathan Rees-Pang playing the Pope who is in office right now. And so the German Pope, what was the German Pope's name?
Carol?
Right, no.
John Paul II?
Sure, no.
Benedict.
Pope Benedict. He's the conservative Catholic guy from Germany, and he wins. The white smoke comes out because he's unanimously voted in. But one of the fellows who was close to him was a fellow from Argentina, and he is the current Pope, Francis. And Francis then goes back to Argentina after losing to Benedict. He goes back to Argentina, and he now wants to retire. And so this show on Netflix shows him coming to the Pope to get the Pope's permission to retire because the Pope needs to sign off on it, and the Pope doesn't want to sign off on it for various reasons, including he didn't want to show disunity, that he's being too heavy-handed. And as this show progresses, that ultimately he thinks, I don't know if this is accurate or not, that it is now time for the progressive from Argentina to become the Pope. And it shows how progressive this current Pope is, and if it is even remotely accurate, is the Pope Catholic? Well, a lot of Catholics are actually wondering that question. It showed him. I'm just telling you what this Netflix special called The Two Popes. It's been nominated for awards. If it's accurate, just full-blown Marxist. That's how they... I'm just telling you, if you're Catholic, don't be annoyed with me. I'm just telling you, that's what the movie showed. Just full-blown Marxist, pro-homosexual. In fact, there was a scene that was fascinating where Pope Benedict was mocking him for being misquoted in the paper. You're always misquoted. Here's what you should do. You should say the wrong thing. Then they'll quote you with having the right position. Whoa. Pretty scathing. Now, while you might kind of applaud that, I think the movie was designed to demonstrate how wonderful this new, sensitive, caring, progressive pope is and how curmudgeonly and crabby that conservative pope was. So it was more about being progressive and cheering him for his Marxism, his stance on homosexuality, marriage. He's the nicer of the two. The pope denounces rigidity as he warns of decline. Quote, I'm translating this from Latin for you. Today, we are no longer the only ones that produce culture. No longer the first, nor the most listened to. Don't think I would argue with that, Francis went on to say. The faith in Europe and in much of the West is no longer an obvious presumption, but is often denied, derided, marginalized, and ridiculed. As a result, he urged the Catholic hierarchy to embrace the necessary pastoral reforms and outlook that will make the church attractive so that it can fulfill its mission to spread the faith. Quote, here we have to be aware of the temptation of assuming a rigid outlook. Rigidity that is born from fear of change and ends up disseminating stakes and obstacles in the ground of the common good, turning it into a minefield of misunderstanding and hatred. In other words, don't be dogmatic, is what the new pope is saying. We can't be the ones being so rigid with our Catholic morality because the world doesn't listen to us anymore and we are putting ourselves on the sideline of culture. We've relegated ourselves into being simply obsolescent. Rigidity and imbalance fuel one another in a vicious circle. I hope I'm translating this from Latin correctly. And these days, the temptation to rigidity has become so apparent. Tradition, he said, is not static, it's dynamic. Oh, that's progressive. That is the Bible conforming itself to the world and not us proclaiming the Bible to the world, demanding that it conform itself to it. And this pope then saying to try to convert people, you can't be doing that. You shouldn't be doing that. And we shouldn't be dogmatic. That's the new pope. Nevertheless, the Roman Catholic Church shares the same theology as Michael Bloomberg. You still must earn your way to heaven. Recently, when I was out at the campus of Kennesaw State University and I ran into a Roman Catholic, he was while it was kind of softened up a little bit, the same thread existed, and that is law. Obey the laws, do good, acts of charity, confession, doing the sacraments, last rites, and maybe you'll go to heaven. Now, has the Pope watered that down? I haven't heard anything about that. It's still a work righteous system. The current Pope, is he a Marxist? I don't know. What's his position on homosexuality? It certainly looks like he's equivocating. These remarks do not encourage anybody to be persuaded that he is anything like the former Pope used to be. By the way, Joey, how old is Anthony Hopkins? He was old and he was delivering a lot of dialogue and he was just really, really excellent, if you don't mind me saying so. Again, don't know how close to accurate.
Born in 37, so what's that make him, 83?
Wow. Alrighty then. Alrighty. Louisiana church, Roman Catholic, filled a plane with holy water and blessed a whole community. A Roman Catholic church in Louisiana came up with a novel way to spread the gospel, blessing an entire community by way of a crop duster. I'm not kidding. We can bless more area in a shorter amount of time, said the priest. That's just paganism. Churchgoers brought them brought with them 100 gallons of water loaded into a crop duster. The priest blessed it there. We waited for the pilot to take off, and then they dropped it over the community to drizzle certain parts of the community, including churches, schools, grocery stores, and other community gathering places. Okay, I guess that's one way to bless people. The Pope, in the meantime, says that you should never seek to convert unbelievers. Anyone who proselytizes is not a disciple of Jesus. That's funny. I would say the opposite. If you do not have a passion to see lost sinners saved, you are not saved yourself. Be sure of that, said the Prince of Preachers. The Pope, speaking of having Jewish and Muslim friends, quote, we are all the same, all children of God. Not if you're not in Christ. It didn't occur to me, and it doesn't have to be like saying to a boy or a girl, you are Jewish, you are a Muslim, come, be converted. We're not in the times of the Crusades. In front of an unbeliever, the last thing I have to do is try to convince him. Never. But listen, never, never bring the gospel by proselytizing. If someone says they're a disciple of Jesus and comes to you with proselytism, they are not a disciple of Jesus. Quotes from the Roman Catholic Pontiff. Jesus has another word. Go and make disciples. And I'm going to stick with his words. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.